Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Group Answers Podcast, a weekly show designed to resource, train, and encourage small group leaders. Each episode considers current trends and resources, as well as timeless truths and methods of discipleship. It's hosted by Brian Daniel and Chris Surratt. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome back to the Group Answers Podcast. I am Brian Daniel, and as always, as is customary, right, Chris Surratt. Chris, we are back and in action.
Yeah, I just got back. I was on a trip to Hawaii, actually.
You got to get that in there, don't you? You just have to get that in there.
Got to get that in there. Well, the church I work for, Harvest, has a campus on Maui, as they say. It's not in Maui. As we would say, like if it was in Boston or something like that, it's actually on Maui, which is an island over there. And so I just got back from kicking groups off for that campus, which was a lot of fun.
Well, let's go ahead and introduce today's guest, because I think she may have something to say about you being in Maui in January or February, whenever that was. I guess it was February.
Yeah. Yeah, beginning week. Well, so excited to have Ashley Anderson on with us. I think this is actually her first time on the Group Answers podcast, but I have had Ashley on some webinars that I've done in the past that probably ported over to a Group Answers episode, whether she knew it or not. But Ashley is at Church of the City, New York City. John Tyson is an amazing, amazing pastor and leader and doing an incredible work in the middle of Manhattan, and she oversees the groups there. And kind of welcome back, Ashley.
Oh, thanks, Chris. It's so good to be back. It's such an honor to be with you guys. And yeah, such an honor to hear about your warm trip to Maui. Meanwhile, we might have been sitting in about 11 inches of snow. So
my wife and I just got back from New York City. I mean, like 3 days ago. So we were up there last weekend. So while Chris was watching the whales over in the islands, I was waiting for a bus in a breezy, balmy 18 degrees. So, yeah, Chris.
Yeah, my hair's freezing when I go outside, but I'm so glad that you got that trip.
Yeah, that's right. We are happy for you.
Hey, islanders need Jesus too, people. They really do. Yeah.
All right, so that's a good place to begin today. First off, great for you to be with us, Ashley. It's really appreciate you giving your time. I know things move pretty fast up there, so thanks for agreeing to come on the show with us today. I wanted to start by just talking about context. One of the things that context has always been one of the things that we talk about within the disciple making conversation, particularly with church planners and leadership. And the last year, I've spent some time in the Northwest. I've had lots of meetings with leaders in Southern California. One of the more interesting one was in the Los Angeles context. And now there's New York City. And I had coffee with some church planners a couple of weeks ago up there. Actually, it's back before Christmas. And I've come to understand context in a better way, a fresher way, sitting down with people that are in those contexts and talking about discipleship. So you are in the Upper West Side. Church of the City is up there too, right?
We're right at Columbus Circle, like in between Upper West and Midtown.
So tell us a little bit about your context. If those distinctives are top of mind, what are, like, when you think about that list of distinctives in your context, how do you articulate that, or how do you understand that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that we are honestly trying to rediscover what our context is coming out of COVID. Going into the pandemic, we were in three locations, Upper East Side, Upper West Side, and in Midtown. coming out of the pandemic. We are in one location, and that soon might even change. And so I think we're rediscovering who our church is. I think like a lot of churches, we reopened our doors and walked into the room and we're like, whose church is this? This is exciting. All of these people are new. That's great. But we don't know them yet. And so we're still kind of getting to know what our new context is. Historically, we've been in transportation hubs, which I still think is probably a little bit more our lane as a church. So there are some parts of New York that really will vary, like block to block, neighborhood by neighborhood. The context will feel so distinct. For us, we tend to have people from all over Manhattan, some of the boroughs, and New Jersey transport into where we are because we're right next to some key subway lines.
Is that the 59th? Is that the 59th Street? Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of our church actually throughout the last couple of years of the pandemic moved out of Manhattan into Brooklyn. And so we've seen our group landscape change quite a bit as people moved towards places that had more open sky and a little bit more kind of breathing room. We used to have a huge density of our population in Hell's Kitchen. And now there's probably just like a few faithful people still there. And we have a little more of a diaspora.
So the last time we talked on the webinar, you guys were in the middle of a hard lockdown. I mean, it was the middle, I guess that was 2020, 2021, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. And you talked about at the time how people had moved out of New York or had left just to go live with family. Are you seeing some of that change now that you guys are no longer under the law? Are people kind of creeping back into the city? I read somewhere the other day that there was some fleeing, but that people are coming back to the city, and it's not what people thought. It was just going to be, you know, tumbleweeds going down the middle of Broadway. How have you seen it change?
Yeah, I think there was that like famous line, New York is dead, which didn't last long. So right. New York is very much not dead. New York is very much alive. We had way more people come back than I think we expected, like you were saying. We did have a pretty significant pipeline, though, out of the city for like more established families and some older couples. That New York City to Nashville pipeline was strong.
Yeah, we feel it.
Lots of people going south. So there was a little bit of a turnover, but I think that like the plummeting rent rates and the city becoming a little bit more vacant, it created space for all these young people who wanted to chase their dreams and just had it in them to move to the city, but didn't have the means. They just like flooded New York. And so for a lot of reasons, our church has like a lot of new young people in it right now.
So to that point, how have you guys, and this is just a follow-up question here, how has the leadership there taken on, let me see if I can phrase this in the best way, how has the leadership there at the church taken on the opportunities at your disposal that have resulted from the change in dynamics? I mean, are you revisiting your group strategy or approach to discipleship? Are you scaling down? Are you looking at the ways that you approach groups and to a greater or lesser effect? I know you're still early in this. Like, I think as the recording of this show, mask mandates statewide are being revisited, I would say. I think New York City is monolithic in that way. I mean, the city will make its own decisions about that, but it looks like we're on the wane. So as you guys emerge, I mean, what questions are you asking? What are you revisiting? What are you rethinking?
Yeah, that's a great question, Brian. I think we are in the middle of a pivot point. To be totally honest, I think that I'm pivoting from a certain amount of distress or feeling like it feels like we are planting a church of a couple thousand people with just like a couple dozen leaders. So the problem felt big for a while. And I think we're now pivoting into what's the opportunity, realizing that there are conferences that pastors are attending right now about how to reach Gen Z. And we just had Gen Z flood into our church accidentally. And so we're trying to figure out how do we leverage this opportunity rather than lament it and miss some of our older, more established leaders, some of our older, more established families, and just kind of press into, okay, the next generation is here. how do we engage them, empower them? And so we can dive into some of what that looks like. A lot of it looks like a lot more opportunities for connection and collisions than maybe our church needed before. I'd say before, our church is very like spiritual formation focused, very discipleship focused, a lot of like long-term relationship, digging deep into spiritual disciplines. And the younger people in our church are hungry for that, but they also want mid-sized gatherings. They're also looking for places to meet people because they only know the like 10 other people in their community group. So we're trying to invent more low barrier, high like opportunity for just collisions with other people.
You guys, last time we talked, you had moved to some degree utilizing online groups, virtual groups. Is that something you are continuing? How did that work? Just kind of give us an update, because I know a lot of churches pivoted all the way online, and then once things kind of opened up, they dropped that and came back, and some churches have continued with their online presence. So talk a little bit about that as far as your groups.
Yeah. So we have two groups that are online still, and that's it. The majority of our community groups have moved back into in-person, and those two groups have unique designs. One is led by actors who are on a national tour with a show. And it's kind of meant for people who are on tour. They call New York City home, but they can't, you know, attend groups or attend church in person, or people who just travel for work. And then we have another online group for parents. Just with the apartment sizes in New York, we've just been having a really hard time hosting family groups again in person. So we've got a Zoom group, they put the kids down and they log in. And those are going well. They're fruitful, but they're small, which was a surprise to me. Like, I actually thought that as long as we offer online groups, people would probably take advantage of them for even the convenience, yet alone, like if they had any health concerns. But we're realizing a hunger for like contextual in-person groups that I didn't actually anticipate.
So there's three, it's sounding like you've got three, I guess, spheres there. There's the travelers, which is somewhat unique, I think, that to your context, and parents, because of various things and the demands of parenting and just getting out and managing schedules for the on, and those are the two online groups. And then you've got the Gen Zs that prefer the in-person meetings. Is that, did I hear that right?
Yeah, there's a spectrum of people who are in that in-person gathering sphere, but definitely we are Gen Z dominant right now.
And you referred to mid-sized groups. That's not the only offering. You also have the more traditional group that would be that 8 to 12 or whatever number it is, right?
Yeah, we have a couple of types of gathering types of groups. We have core groups, which are 3 to 4 size. And that's really like, you know, meeting with guys, women with women for confession, accountability, prayer, encouragement. We have community groups, which is that kind of 8 to 12. And then we have, we're just launching a bunch of clubs right now. So we have coffee clubs all over the city, people who just meet up in their neighborhoods, start their Friday mornings by having coffee together. We're launching a running club and a supper club, probably a hiking club and a cycling club sometime soon.
So what's the rhythm of the clubs, the core and the mid-sized group? Are they all weekly, some every other week, or as needed, as scheduled, as events are planned? Is that how you're doing it?
Yes. So core groups are pretty flexible. This is actually one of the programs that yields disproportionate fruit in our church based on how little I've invested in it and how little, honestly, we've programmed it. We just put a core group manual on our website and we encourage people to saying like, hey, these are the spiritual disciplines that are often neglected in the Christian life. Gather together and do them. So we have no idea how many core groups there are in our church. We don't organize them. People self-organize. So those often will meet weekly, sometimes bi-weekly, but that's a little more up to the people in them. Community groups are weekly. Coffee clubs are weekly, but they're a little like drop in, drop out, come whenever you can. And then some of those other clubs will be more monthly.
You guys utilize sermon discussion for your curriculum. Is that correct?
We do.
Is for, do you have an expectation for some of your groups that are more activity based to do any type of curriculum, or do you want them to eventually graduate to that direction, or what's kind of your pipeline for groups as they kind of move through the discipleship process?
Yeah, so we keep our clubs and our groups in kind of different ecosystems. So the clubs are really not programmed at all. It's just meant to help you find neighbors. And so some of them actually go around every week and share prayer requests, but most of them just have coffee and hang out. So it's very low programming, very low expectation. Our community groups move through our core cultural practices as a church, which is presence, formation, and mission throughout the year. So they're doing sermon discussion, but in the spring, for example, we're focused on mission. And so they're doubling down on those disciplines. And then we'll integrate presence and prayer in the summer, formation in the fall.
And that follows the preaching calendar. So that's what he's speaking on. And you guys are reemphasizing it with your discussion guides?
More or less. We're growing in that integration with the teaching calendar. We have a very apostolic leader who tends to plan and have vision for sermon series ahead of where we're at in planning the group season, but moving towards alignment.
One reason I ask is I'm kind of in that situation now with the church that I serve at Harvest. We're trying to figure out that calendar and align it with a pastor. And we're trying to think year ahead, year and a half ahead. Mm. But, you know, things change so quickly, you know, obviously over the last couple of years, things have changed quickly. So are you guys planning that far ahead or trying to think that far ahead what your people are going to need? Or you're like, okay, if we can survive this month.
Yeah, we're definitely more on surviving this month. We have a plan until April, which for us right now is pretty good.
So just this organic kind of sense is, I think, for a lot of us more aspirational. What is it that you guys have done, you feel like, that has put you in a place where you can roll something out there, just put it on the website, and it finds its traction? I've always felt like that discipleship and groups, the more organic you can make that, it's more of that life on life kind of approach, doing life together, hearkening back to, you know, years ago and some of the visions of group ministry at the time. But it sounds like you guys have at least found some success in getting there. So how are you approaching leadership development and equipping within that context? And what is it that you think? I mean, it may just be as easy as New York City, and everyone is in very close proximity. What I've learned as I've gotten out and about is in the cities in the Northeast and some other places different from the South is they kind of get community at this level a little bit, I won't say more easily. I think it's just a more accessible understanding of what community is. So, I mean, it may be that easy, but I know that's kind of a long-winded question, but the organic nature as it applies to discipleship and your equipping and enabling leaders, what is it that you guys think that you've done?
Wow. Well, I am honored by that question, but I would love to say it was because of my leadership expertise, but I think it is the nature of the city. Our community groups, like our church, like our city, are pretty transient. And so this type of core model was actually built out of a deficit where people were feeling like they didn't have intimacy in their relationships, even while being in a group, because there was just like a revolving door of who was in that group. And then also people's lives are really hard here. It's just really hard to do life. And so I think they were more willing to press into dependence on things like confession, to dependence on things like prayer, because we just have like a little bit less of the, like, I can just pull myself together and do it on my own here. So
I think it's fascinating to me, again, going back to that context, you're talking about New York and they just get community because they basically have to, you know, to survive. You know, there sounds like, you know, if you move there as a Gen Zer wanting to chase your dreams, it's so expensive to live there. So you're probably going to have to room with somebody and it's so congested, that you're going to, like you said, bump into people, and you know that creates community and all of that. And I know from your background, you came from DC before this, correct? And so you really understand the transient. You got to get leaders, and you got to get them trained quickly, and or they're going to move on, or they are moving on. And now I was just having this conversation in Southern California, where my ministry is right now. It's a lot of the same, but very different. So very expensive to live there, just like New York City. You're talking about Los Angeles, Orange County, especially where Harvest is in Irvine and in that area. Very, very expensive. And so people are struggling. They have two or three jobs. But the community aspect is not there. It's more spread out. People don't just bump into each other.
You have to drive everywhere there.
You have to drive everywhere, and there's just not this innate sense of I need people in my life in Southern California. So what we have to do is convince them why they need people in their lives. Where it sounds like from your side, they're convinced they need people. Yeah. So now you're introducing, you need disciplines, you need God, you need Jesus. Is that kind of your approach on it?
Yeah, I do think that where we have people who are probably at a place of readiness of like, I know I need the power of God and I know I need community around me. That probably is more your guys's challenge, is getting people to that place, convincing them of those two truths, which are true about you, whether you live in LA or Manhattan or Milwaukee. But there was one pastoral care meeting I had in DC that before I was even working in groups ministry really marked me. And it was a husband and a wife who were just walking through like a brokenness in their marriage. And they said voluntarily, they said, I wish that we had joined a small group 3 years ago, because now it's actually a little too late to try to invite new community into our lives. Not that they couldn't jump in right then, but they were like, I wish that we had 3 years of relationship to now rest on. And so that for me was like personally a wake up call of like, wow, we all need this and we all will need this at some point in our lives, no matter where we live. So I think it's stories like that that really challenge us to press it.
I love this conversation. I was with, it's been a few years ago now, but I was talking with a pastor, a local pastor, who had also been in the Northwest and in Chicago. And he had come into the Nashville, and we were just talking about groups and how groups work. And he made a comment that I've never forgotten. He said, people in the South don't think they need any more friends, and that community is commensurate with friendship, that the depth of biblical community, at least in this guy's opinion, just doesn't get traction here, at least conversantly, like it does in a context like in New York City. And it sounds like California, Chris, what you're talking about is like almost a hybrid of the two. There's a little bit of both. So you've got a median kind of thing. And so this idea of context is just really coming to bear. I just wonder, Chris, if you've gotten around, like what's the I don't know how to ask the question, but it seems like there is an equivalency that needs to be worked out, like in the different regions and then even within the regions. So in that way, Ashley has probably maybe an easier job at it, because it seems like it's just at your fingertips. Community and people is just all there. And so the question then becomes, what are we going to do when these people gather? I mean, I don't mean to be dismissive of it, but the understanding and need of relationship and community, I think there's a better deeper understanding of what that is in a place like New York City, that maybe in a rural situation that same understanding is not there, that interdependency. And that may not even be correct. It may just be different.
I'd agree. And I would say our challenge in New York is to not allow our community to turn inward. because it's meeting such a deep need in our hearts, our then temptation is just to turn inside ourselves and focus on ourselves, on our group, on our community, on the needs that it's meeting for us. And Pastor John Tyson, he puts it this way. He calls it category-defying community, that we're not just building a bunch of friend groups, but that these groups have to exist for something outside themselves. Yeah. And so I think that actually is, in some ways, the solution to both, to getting people to see the value of community and to allowing people to turn their community outward to the world. So this season, our community groups are focused on, like, they're fasting and praying for the city. They're pooling their lunch money together as they fast. They're using that as a missions fund. They're engaging the homeless, and they're partnering with Alpha. So we're trying to embed this idea that your group is not for your group is for the city. And we're slowly getting there. We're like slowly discipling ourselves into that.
That's good. And, you know, I'm thinking through the context. It also points out how you cannot take a system that necessarily works in New York City and just drop it into Nashville, Tennessee, or take something that worked in Nashville, Tennessee and just drop it into Southern California. Now, the big picture is the same. We are all called to make disciples. And we believe that that happens best within the context of community, but how that community is formed in the parameters around that may change depending on where in the country that you are. And so understanding how people live in it, and some of that is shifting, which is interesting because you talked about, we're definitely in Tennessee getting a migration from New York. We're getting a migration from California. And so we're getting all of these different kind of world viewpoints into a very Southern Bible Belt town and area that we have to even think beyond that. And so that long-winded thing leads to my next question for you, Ashley, is from where you sit, what do you see as the future? What should we be thinking about next for discipleship when it comes to the Big C Church?
Yeah, I love that question. No pressure.
That's such a good one. It's such a big one.
You got this.
You got it.
I'm writing it down for my next book.
Why did we ask this question first?
I know, right?
I want to phone a friend and bring John Tyson in here because this is his bread and butter. It's like, where's the future of the Western church? Let me answer maybe specifically for our church and then see if I can zoom out. I would say at Church of the City right now, we're focusing very much, I hear this across the board from a lot of people, is less content, more connection. I think we realized that we were trying to push people past their level of maturity or push people past their level of strength, even. Like, we want people praying for revival and we want to see people pressing in, but they just didn't even have their basic needs met. Like, they were just spiritually starving. They needed community. They needed like very basic things to build their like Maslow's hierarchy back up again. And so we are kind of turning gear shift down from content into connection and trying to think about less programs and also more pathways. We're ascending church, whether we like it or not. We've got people for 3 years or less. And so we're really trying to think through, in 3 years, how can we send these people out as more spiritually mature? How do we get them the experiences and the tools that they need to then go missionally and bless and build the next church that they're a part of in Nashville? and so we're trying to focus a lot on discipleship pathways and how are we building our people? And I also would say then, maybe zooming out to the church, what I'm hearing more from pastors is this shift from programs and production to power. Like, I think we just ran out of power as the church. We ran to the end of our own strength. We ran to the end of ourselves over the last couple of years. And so I'm just seeing a lot of churches hitting their knees and just really leaning in and pressing into prayer and asking that the Holy Spirit would be the thing that would fuel our programs. I think that, like, intellectually, we've all been there, but programmatically, like scheduling, I have more meetings than I have prayer blocks. praying for God to move through the ministries that I'm planning. And so I think that's just been really humbling. And I think that that's the call of the hour. I was in Exodus this week and it reminded me of this. There's this passage, I believe it's Exodus 28, and it's talking about Aaron and the priests and what their garments are meant to look like. And they were going to have the 12 tribes of Israel on a stone over their hearts. And then they were meant to have these elements that helped them hear the voice of God, the, you know, how they voted to see what decision they should make for God to lead them. And those things were supposed to be in their hearts as they went before God. And so I just felt this deep conviction. As we make decisions as leaders, that's what we need, is the names of our people and the voice of the Holy Spirit on our hearts as we move into this next season.
That's a pause for effect, Chris, right there. That was really good. I need to play this back so that we can pull out some sound bites for the show. Okay, that's really good, Ashley. I appreciate that. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Group Answers Show. Thank you for being with us. As always, we encourage you to find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Give us a rating, leave a comment. We do use those comments. We love getting comments, and they do inform future topics. Thank you to Ashley for giving up time today in the busy city. So look forward to the next time we're together. And I would love to get coffee with one of the clubs next time I'm in town. I think that would be a blast.
Yes. We'll add you. This is such an honor. Thank you both so much for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks for being with us. That's going to do it for this episode of the Group Answers Show.